Today on the Dark Side of Wikipedia and our Friday News Roundup, Chad Daybell pleads not guilty to murder charges. Accused shooter in 55 freeway death of 6-year-old boy faces murder charges. A California man killed his wife. Propped her on the couch on Christmas, he gets 15 years to life. And of course, Josh Duggar. Will his sister sue him for sexual assault? Today on the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
That it is. And here we go again with our Friday News Roundup edition of the program, diving into the darkest stories of the week. Tony and Carol Hughes with you on today's episode of the program. And here we go again. More fun.
Right. You know, whenever you say Friday News Roundup, I think it just sounds like it's going to be kind of light and cheery and... You know, feel good stories, and then they're just not.
It's all dark, dark, dark.
Right?
Yeah. It's not, yeah, because Friday News Roundup, like, what's the, there's a, like a NPR show that does a Friday News Roundup. I can't think of what it is. Is it Morning Edition
it's
or something?
1A.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I had no other name for it, and I wasn't going to, like, let's make something that rhymes and sounds fun and kitschy. It's like, it's a Friday. It is what it is. It's looking
at. But it sounds like it should be happy. That's what I like about it, yeah. That it's this kind of juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Let's talk about news and bum, bum, bum.
Horrible human beings.
Right.
Left
and
right.
That's what we do on this show.
Exactly. Our first one is an update to one that we've been following here for most of the year, titled, He's a Liar, He's a Liar, Grandmother, Brother React to Chad Daybell's Not Guilty Plea. Kay Woodcock was not expecting to become so emotional during Chad Daybell's arraignment Wednesday morning. This comes to us from EastIdahoNews.com, by the way. Woodcock traveled from Louisiana to St. Anthony on a one-year anniversary of her grandson Joshua J.J. Value being found dead, buried in Daybell's backyard with his sister, Taylor Ryan. The grieving grandmother sat on the first row of the courtroom next to Colby Ryan, J.J., and Tylee's older brother when Daybell pled not guilty to 8 felony charges, including murder and conspiracy to commit murder. Woodcock started to cry and grabbed Ryan's hand. I didn't expect it. As with all this, it comes over in a wave of emotion, and it just makes it more real, she said after the hearing. It just seemed so surreal for a long time, and as you accept it more and more, things just get to be more real. Daybell and his wife, Lori Vallow Daybell, were indicted by a grand jury on May 24th. They're also charged in connection with the death of Chad Daybell's first wife, Tammy Daybell. 3 of Chad and Tammy's children sat behind their father during the arraignment and quickly left the courthouse following the hearing. Several police officers, detectives, and other investigators were in the courtroom along with a few members of the community. Daybell wore a white shirt and tie and repeatedly said not guilty as Judge Stephen Boyce read him the charges. It's hard. It's really hard, Ryan said afterwards. Seeing him, knowing he did it, and knowing everything about the truth, this whole process is really hard. We all have to go through it and are going to say what it's going to say. He's going to lie about it. From the beginning, they have lied. There's nothing you can do about it. Ryan says he has spent the past year focusing on the positive and trying to remember happy times with his siblings and normal days, swimming in the summer, hanging out together and laughing. I was just thinking about all the good times we had. That's all we can hold on to and remember. You don't want to have these memories be bad, and you don't want your memories to be about this them being gone, he explains. A hearing will be held on June 23rd to set a trial date for Daybell. Lori Vallow Daybell has been declared incompetent, and her proceedings are on hold until she is deemed fit for trial. Woodcock is pleased proceedings are finally moving forward in Chad Daybell's case and plans to be there every step of the way. I'm glad we're moving on to the next step. Hard to believe it's 1 year to the day where we found out that they were for sure dead when the police unearthed them in Daybell's backyard, Woodcock says. I think he should just give it up. How do you have 2 kids in your backyard? You don't know anything about it. He's a liar. He's a liar. Good question. I mean, how the fuck do you have two dead kids, your kids in the fucking backyard, and you don't know? You don't know what.
And even like, okay, so it was a big area. It's not like, you know, a little backyard.
Yeah.
But he knows that the woman he's seeing has two kids and yeah. he knows they're missing. Even if he doesn't know anything else, like, well, they were here and then they're gone. You know, like, and the whole thing is so horrible too, because those kids didn't have to die. They could have gone to live with anybody. There was no reason to kill him.
No.
Other than to be horrible to the people who love them. I don't know.
It was just amazing how long that those two lasted, you know, out there in the public.
And I think that she killed her husband.
Yeah, I do too. But they were out there in public and it was like, where's the kids? Where's the kids? Where's the kids? And they were able to exist. They were able to not have to be accountable for so long. That's what got me. It's like, how is this? Because the grandmother was making waves.
Yeah. And then like the one friend admitted that she reached out to her and asked her to lie about the kids. Okay, so that sure doesn't prove any innocence. But then if there are no children anywhere, you can't prove anything, I guess. They couldn't really do anything till they found him?
I don't know.
It's so sad.
It feels like there's a big lapse.
Like, it's all just ridiculous. And any murder, there's not a good explanation for any of them. But maybe if there's a crime of passion, or if it's a we're out to get the money, or there's some kind of cover up, there's a reason. There's no reason to kill those kids. Not like I would understand any of the others, but they're children.
Sure.
It just pisses me off. Like, how could you do that to your kids? And knowing, like, all the time that people were asking him, where are they? Where are they? They knew. Mm-hmm. Or at least she did, for sure. I know he knew. But instead, it was like, we don't know anything.
I know.
I don't get how you live with yourself. And what's crazy about her being crazy is that her husband had gone to the police. And he said she is unstable. Like, he was really worried about what she could do.
Mm-hmm.
And he was totally ignored. They're like, we just don't see it. And then she charmed them when they brought her in. And they're like, she's fine. And then now when it's convenient to her, oh, look, poor me, I'm crazy.
I know. People like this.
And I'm assuming she is.
You gotta be. I mean, there's no, this is not normal, healthy human behavior. I mean, these are very, very flawed people there's no rectifying them. There's no rehabilitating them and bringing them back for some good of society. Fucking kill them. Done with it. Let's continue on to our next story. this is a accused shooter in 55 freeway death of 6-year-old boy faces murder charges. Hey, what do you think? Good idea. Auto body worker accused of shooting a 6-year-old Aiden Leos on the 55 freeway in Orange County, and the girlfriend, who authorities said was driving the car, appeared in Orange County courtroom on Tuesday to face charges over the boy's death. Marcus Anthony Eertz was charged with murdering Leos and also with firing at a car with people inside, according to a criminal complaint filed Tuesday. If convicted of both, he could receive a maximum sentence of 40 years to life in prison. Wayne Lee was charged with being an accessory after the fact, as well as storing a concealed firearm in a vehicle. If convicted, she could receive 3 years in state prison and 1 year in county jail. Neither Eretz, 24, nor Lee, 23, were actually present in the courtroom on the third floor of the Orange County Superior Court building in the Santa Ana Civic Center. Because of pandemic protocols, the couple from separate jails appeared before a judge on a video screen with only the top half of his face visible. Eretz peered into the camera set up in front of him. Lee couldn't be seen at all, but he could be heard speaking. "Yes, I'm here," Lee said when Judge Larry Yellen asked if he was present. Yellen accepted the provisional bail amount for both. Bail for Eretz was set at $2 million. Lee's at $500,000. In the brief hearing on Tuesday, neither entered a plea. Public defenders for both asked for more time to prepare to defend their clients. While Lee was arrested on suspicion of murder, Orange County District Attorney Todd Spitzer said there wasn't enough evidence to charge her with a crime. In charged with being an accessory, the DA's office said prosecutors believe Lee helped Eretz elude capture following the shooting. The case against both of them. We could not file any of these charges if we could not prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So in respect to both, I'm absolutely convinced that with the charges we filed, we're rock solid, Orange County District Attorney Todd Spitzer said in a news conference. He was the one that fired the firearm. She's the driver of the vehicle. Based on our review of the evidence, he said, we did not believe we could file murder charges against him at this time. Outside the courtroom Tuesday, Spitzer said prosecutors were charging Ertz with murder based on the depraved heart theory. That means that they believe he acted with such reckless disregard that he should have known he was creating an unusually high risk of death to another person. Charging documents accuse Ertz of malice afterthought in killing Leos. In legal terms, malice can either be expressed, done with intent to kill, or implied, displaying reckless to a point of indifference to life. Our theory is that it was reckless indifference to life, Spitzer said. 2 weeks earlier, police said the couple was driving on the 55 freeway when Lee made a possibly unsafe lane change in front of Leos's mother, who responded with a rude gesture. Officer says Lee's car then wound up behind the mother's car, and Eric fired one shot at the car. The bullet ripped through the trunk and into Aiden's seat. The Volkswagen station wagon, authorities say Lee was driving and continued north and was caught on cameras eastbound at 91 freeway near McKinley Street in Corona. The CHP released the photo to the public, generating hundreds of tips, but authorities had not revealed how they determined the suspects were Lee and Fritz. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, if you're going to just go there and start firing a gun into another car, I you can get the strictest possible penalty for that one, too. I don't have a lot of sympathy.
They killed a child.
Yeah. I don't care if you didn't do it with intent to kill a child, but you didn't know what you're shooting at when you shot at a car. Right.
And, like, we've all been pissed off in the car before. Somebody's done something stupid. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's driving. Things happen. People don't always pay attention. I mean, everyone's done something stupid.
Yeah.
But the fact that you don't even know those people and it's like, you just cut me off. Boom, get out your gun.
Yeah.
And that happened another time in Missouri, I think it was this week.
Mm-hmm.
And they shot at the car. It hit the dad. The family's in the car. Mm-hmm. Hit the dad in the leg. But the women in the car, there was like a two-year-old. I think there was two kids. But one of them was 2 years old. And like, so they're so pissed off. They got their kids in the car. Like, that's some fine parenting. Like, those... I can't even wrap my brain around it. I just don't.
We have an epidemic of people not able to cope with anything. And I think that that's where we have this world that we live in now, where you have shit like this going down and you have people walking into workplaces and however many mass shootings we have in a week. People can't cope. People don't know how to cope. We stopped doing a lot of coping skills or teaching people coping skills a long time ago, and everybody was just right. Everybody got the fucking participation trophy. And then when it comes to dealing with anything, some adversity in life, holy shit, everybody just freaks the fuck out.
Yeah, like that, adversity, like, oh, you just pulled out in front of me.
Exactly.
Boom.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's what I'm like, the smallest of things, suddenly it's like, they got to die. It's like, no, they pulling out in front of you doesn't mean they should die. You shooting at the car means you should probably die. But they made a lane change and you didn't like it. So
I saw some serious road rage recently, and it was all happening right next to me. Mm-hmm. I was not involved. And I mean, I get why the one car was pissed, because the other car was not paying attention at all.
Yeah.
But the one guy kind of, a semi's pulling in, turning right, does a wide turn. This other guy's trying to get around him, so he does an even wider turn. So he goes into the wrong lanes. But now the light had changed, so the guy in that lane next to me ends up all the way in the wrong lane.
Yeah.
So that would piss me off, too, if I'm all the way over there. But rather than get back into your right lane as soon as possible, that guy continued for 3 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Cars are honking at him. So this guy's pissed off, and he's just waiting to get up close enough to that guy to cut him off.
Yeah.
So he did. This is all right in front of me.
Sure.
He cuts him off. But then the guy who was pissed, he started spinning out because he hit some gravel. So he starts spinning out. He's going 50 miles an hour. And I'm like, oh, shit, mm-hmm. This is not good. And then next thing you know, they ended up stopped right next to each other. And I'm like, get out of here. I was panicking because I'm like, guns are next. Guns are next.
Yeah.
I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
You know, because like that's, I get why you're pissed. I get it. But just go on.
Exactly.
Shit happens. You know, and the fact that people would, that's how you deserve to die. Like you cut me off and I don't care that you have a child in the backseat that I just killed.
No regard. I mean, there's not even like, that's like the second thought. They just see the one person and that's it. They don't consider that maybe there's other people in this car.
Right. You just can't exactly see a car seat.
It's just how fucking stupid people can be. You know, I mean.
And the fact, and you know, they drove off and didn't know they'd killed somebody. I highly doubt that. They were like, yeah, I hope we killed a kid.
No.
But they didn't. It was just so reckless and without any thought about what could happen.
Yeah.
That's,
and now our court system gets to deal with them. They clearly did this crime, and we're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on the court case and everything that goes along with them protecting somebody. Like, and it's just, why? Look, you're a horrible human being. We don't need you anymore. Goodbye.
That's when I'm like, just admit it. Just admit
exactly.
It. Save everybody some money. You know, go sit in jail forever. Fine.
Why?
But like, why does that family have to sit in the courtroom listening to that son of a bitch say he didn't know anything about those kids being buried in his backyard?
Yeah. Exactly. Why?
You know, the family's been through enough. Have some compassion.
I know.
You know, you haven't had any yet. Maybe do something kind.
Yeah.
Or that's not exactly kind. Maybe do something that has a little bit of compassion.
Yeah. You think, but I think a lot of people...
A little bit of accountability. Own it. You did it.
That's the thing. With, like I said, people can't handle accountability. Narcissism is just fucking rampant in our world. And they don't feel they have to. Guilt doesn't exist in the minds of many. And they just operate, and then we get to deal with their fucking chaos after the fact. And that's...
Yeah.
Anaheim man gets 15 years to life for killing his wife. Why is the minimum like 15 years? Shouldn't it start like much higher than that? Like 15 years on a murder charge? But okay. An Anaheim man who killed his wife and then propped her body up on a sofa while her children opened Christmas presents in 2011 was sentenced Friday, June 4th to 15 years to life in prison. William Wallace, now 39, was convicted earlier this year of second-degree murder for killing 26-year-old Zazella Preston, culmination of a relationship marked by repeated domestic abuse. Preston's mother, during Friday's sentencing hearing, described Wallace as a psychopath with a hair-trigger temper who cared only about himself. He beat and tortured my daughter and at the same time mentally assassinated her children. Zazella Preston said, he showed her no mercy. Let's show him no mercy. The mother, who has become the guardian of Preston's 3 children, noted that her daughter was weeks away from graduating from Cypress College when she was killed. Preston had been studying domestic violence, hoping to become a counselor. William Wallace robbed us of her knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, Sadell Preston said. Zazelle was an amazing and talented young woman until he came along and took her from us forever. Wallace did not speak during Friday's hearing. As part of his sentence, Wallace was given credit for more than 9 years he'd already spent behind bars while awaiting trial. On Christmas Eve in 2011, Wallace and Preston returned from a party at a neighbor's home to the Anaheim apartment the couple was sharing with their newborn son and Preston's daughters, who at the time were 3 and 8 years old. During Wallace's trial, her oldest daughter, who still was a minor, described Wallace and Preston arguing, a confrontation she said turned physical when Wallace pushed Preston into a glass table. The daughter helped Wallace pull pieces of glass from Preston's body, she testified. Then Wallace carried Preston into the bathroom to clean up her body, dropping her and knocking her head into the side of the toilet seat on the way. The daughter said her mother's body was cold as Wallace took her into the bedroom. Hours later, on Christmas morning, the daughter described Wallace dragging Preston's body into the living room and placing it onto a couch before telling the two girls to open gifts. According to prosecutors, Wallace told the children, "Mommy ruined Christmas. She got drunk and ruined Christmas." Relatives of Preston during the trial described Wallace as a controlling and violent man. They said there were previous incidents of domestic abuse and that Wallace has threatened to kill Preston on several occasions. Preston's grandmother testified to finding her lying in the fetal position in the street after one alleged beating of her hand at the hands of Wallace, and about another occasion when Preston called her cell phone to help while hanging from Wallace in a convenience store bathroom. Statement to the court Friday, Lori Galloway, a former Anaheim councilwoman and executive director of the Eli Home for Abused Women and Children, said Preston attempted to escape from Wallace numerous times. She desperately tried but was savagely beaten and murdered before she could. Wallace's attorney, Heather Moorhead, denied during the trial that Wallace intended to kill Preston or was responsible for the fatal injuries Preston sustained in what the defense attorney described as a drunken argument. Jurors are tasked with considering a variety of possible charges, from involuntary manslaughter to first-degree murder, as they sifted through testimony from witnesses that in some cases appeared to be at odds with statements they gave nearly a decade earlier in the hours after Preston's death. During the opening of the trial, Senior Deputy District Attorney Heather Brown described a phone call Wallace made to Preston's grandmother on Christmas morning. The prosecutor, recounting the grandmother's description, alleged that Wallace said he and Preston had been drinking and I tossed her around a bit. But during her testimony, the grandmother, now 90, didn't recall Wallace using the word tossing. Instead, remembered Wallace saying he and Preston were drinking and horsing around. The defense attorney also noted that during the trial that Preston's older daughter initially told detectives that her mother had tripped and fallen into a table before Wallace could stop her. The daughter testified she was scared of Wallace, and the prosecutor later told jurors that Wallace had coached the girl on what to tell investigators. So, there you go. My question is, this happened in 2010 years ago.
Yeah, and he is in jail awaiting trial for 9 years. And yeah, so the child was 9 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know what her age was then, but... You know, and you know, I can't imagine all of the trauma those kids went through even before that day. Because if he had been that abusive to their mom, they witnessed some shit.
Mm-hmm.
So then it culminates in that day. She's picking glass out of her mother's body. And... You know, like, I think just to live with all of that would be so traumatic.
Completely.
Like, okay, so maybe what she said 9 years ago isn't what she's saying now. It was 9 years ago. He should have been to trial way before then.
How is this, like, the system, like, failed that much at 10 years?
This poor family has been through enough.
I know.
Like, they lost their loved one. And... You know, these poor children lost their mother, and then further traumatized by dad bringing out the body.
Mm-hmm.
Look, mom got drunk and ruined Christmas. I mean, and then for them to have to wait that long for any kind of a closure, like, because it's all just hanging out there the whole time. At least he was in jail awaiting trial, but Jesus.
I know.
That just makes me mad.
Lovely, lovely human beings.
Jesus.
Speaking of lovely human beings.
Josh Duggar.
It's that time in the show.
Everybody get ready for
the Josh Duggar. Okay. I don't have jingles this week, but we got more interesting things. Will his sister sue him for sexual assault? This story comes to us from the Hollywood Gossip. It's been 6 weeks since Josh Duggar was arrested on child pornography charges, and it seems more and more likely that this latest scandal will bring about the end of the Duggars' media empire. Sure, Josh has been involved in numerous revolting scandals in the past, but this one is much different. For one, it looks as though Josh will more likely than not be going to prison for as much as 20 years. Barring any unforeseen technicality, it's nearly impossible to imagine him beating these charges. On top of that, the current situation is causing Duggar detractors to re-examine the family's scandals. Chief among them, of course, was the revelation that Josh molested five young girls while he was in his teens. Four of the victims his sisters, and a fifth was a family babysitter. Shockingly, the Duggars were permitted to remain on TLC even after it was revealed that Jim, Bob, and Michelle helped Josh avoid prosecution for his crimes. The network canceled 19 Kids and Counting, but that turned out to be a largely symbolic gesture. Within months, the family was back on the air with the series that was originally titled Jill and Jessa Counting On. The title was later shortened to just Counting On, reportedly at the behest of Jim Bob, who wanted the series to focus on the entire family, i.e. him and Michelle, not just two of his daughters. It was the latest indignity suffered by the two young women who have been victimized by their father and brother since childhood. And now it seems it might finally be fighting back. On the Duggar Nation Facebook group and elsewhere, there's been talk of Jill and Jessa filing suit against Josh for the pain inflicted on them in childhood. If the statute of limitations to report sexual abuse in the state of Arkansas, one user wrote last week, asking again because some of the adult Duggar girls are apparently trying to sue again for what Josh did to them. Frankly, they had every opportunity to sue up until now, the person continued. I don't think that they realize what Jim Bob will get upset and will likely write them off in an attempt in any way to retaliate against Golden Boy Josh, the post continued. There generally is no statute of limitations for civil suits involving rape and sexual assault. So the amount of time that's passed likely will not prevent Jill and Jessa from suing their brother. As for other concerns, it's true that Jill and Jessa could have filed suit at any point, but they may not have felt that they had the freedom to do so until recently. Jill has cut off all contact with her parents, and Derek Dillard's feud with Jim Bob has been cited as the main reason for the rift. However, several insiders have indicated that Jill is deeply upset about her parents' handling of Josh's sex crimes. As for Jessa, it seems she's been re-traumatized by the events of the last 2 months. This week, Josh's creepy comments about Jessa have resurfaced, much to the horror of anyone with a sense of basic decency. I'm watching you, Josh commented on a pic of Jess and Ben Seawold during their courtship. Josh added the eyes emoji, which is often used to convey sexual desire. He also made comments about how incest is not looked down upon in Arkansas during an episode of 19 Kids and Counting. If Jill and Jessa were to sue, there'd be no going back for them. The bridge between women and the parents will remain forever incinerated. No doubt, there was a time when such a open, hostile action against their own family would be an unthinkable thing, but thankfully, those days are long gone. It'd be interesting. I say go for it. What do you got to lose?
You know, because I think those girls have been victimized more than once.
And I'm
not saying that, you know, it was a physical victimization, sure. But the fact that they've never gotten any justice.
If you have a
family, you know, everything was kind of swept under the rug and no big deal, just suck it up and go on. And that's not how it works.
No. They will continue to be victimized as long as they have a relationship with their parents. Because unless those parents stand up and say, look, we're disowning Josh and we're sorry, we fucked up. We thought we were doing the right things. We were clearly wrong on how we handled all this. That's the only way I could see that having some sort of a peaceful ending. But if they're going to continue to stand by their son and then let their daughters just, you know, suffer like this and like with no justice, fuck that. That's not parenting. Why would you even want that for your parents? And, you know, I get, you know, that's not an easy thing, but geez, I mean, you're just asking yourself to be continually victimized by just being a part of the family still.
Right.
Or communicating with them. Some things are just, you know, if they don't have the decency to handle it the way that they should have, then those daughters are not responsible for being good daughters to those parents.
But, you know, it's, you know, especially the, you know, they were brought up differently than you or I, and number one in the public eye for a lot of years,
sure.
But, you know, that whole really religious sort of upbringing that maybe they don't feel like they can push back against their parents, and they're women. And I don't think the women have the say, or at least in their family haven't had the say. Hopefully in their own relationships, it's better. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, so they don't really have a lot of power. So maybe they've never felt like they could.
No, I mean,
really
yeah.
go after him or anything. So maybe this is what it takes to get them to be like, to get everybody else's outrage, mm-hmm. and maybe they get it.
And I'm hoping they find the strength to do what they need to do now. I mean, I get why they would have held back. It's essentially you're brainwashed, you know, and the conditioning that you had, it made it not, you know.
And the men have the power.
Yeah.
Now, like I've said before, I don't know a lot about their religion, but normally in real traditional, super traditional kind of religions like that,
yeah.
Normally it's the men who have all the power.
Sure.
And, you know, if you can't wear pants, chances are you don't have much of a say.
Exactly.
So what goes on, can't even say what you're going to wear.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just hope the girls get some justice out of this. And I hope his wife figures this out.
Yeah.
Like, this is not good. Like, there's not going to be any redeeming this or saving this marriage. You know, can this marriage be saved? No.
You got to get out of there for the sake of those kids. And that's where she needs to ask herself is, what do I need to do that's going to be best for these kids?
For the children, not for her.
Not for
what's
her.
Best for the kids.
Exactly. And I can
and
tell you
what.
And
if I got a husband, it's in jail awaiting a trial over child pornography, the last thing he's going to see are my children.
Yeah. It ain't him being daddy.
There's no way. No way.
No. Messed up stories. There you go.
So many of them.
That's our Friday News Roundup of sunshine, kids. Thank you guys for listening and keeping us on the air. If you'd like access to our advanced episodes of the show, as well as our final chapters, all sorts of extra stuff there for you, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia to help support the show and keep us on the air. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Dark Side of Wikipedia.